Welcome to Two Pizza Marketing, the podcast for small team marketers with hosts Melissa Moody and Ashley McGovern. You might have heard about the two pizza rule, which says the most agile, effective team meetings are ones that are small enough to only need two pizzas for the meeting. Let's get into the marvelous mess that is two pizza marketing. Hello, Two Pizza Marketer. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. This is your host, Ashley McGovern, and I'm here with Brooke Janicek, and she is a fractional CMO. She's the founder of The Grow CMO, which is a fractional leadership solution for effective marketing growth that she founded. So Brooke, welcome to the show. Will you share more about what you've been up to?
Absolutely. It's so nice to meet you, and thank you for having me. So really excited to talk with all of you today. And yeah, as you mentioned, I'm a fractional CMO, and some people don't know what that means, but it essentially means that I work with a variety of clients. So some clients don't have the funds, or maybe they're not ready yet to bring on a high-level marketing exec into their organization. And so they will hire fractional CMOs to come in to work on their business for a fraction of the time. The benefit to the business is they don't have to pay full-time benefits. They don't have to have me on their payroll, but they still get that executive coaching and that executive leadership for their team. So I work a lot with startups, to be honest. And then they may or may not have someone on their marketing team. And then if I work with an established organization, they would have someone on their marketing team that I could come in and provide leadership to, and maybe the higher level strategy. So It's been a really good career move for me, and I'd be happy to dive into kind of how I got there. Yes. But yeah, it's for anyone that's considering it, it's been a really good move for me.
Yeah. So maybe walk me back a couple of years before that, like how you decided to, one, just start your own business.
Yeah, absolutely. I get asked this question a lot, and I will be honest, it wasn't something that I had sat down and said, okay, my 10-year plan is get out of corporate by this date and start your own business. I had always wanted and had on this kind of pedestal, the CMO title. Like that's what I've always strived for ever since I started my career at an ad agency as a project manager in my 20s. And I was always looking for that. And as my career evolved and I had the opportunity to work with some amazing brands and lead some wonderful teams, I started to realize that I loved helping people grow just as much as I loved helping businesses grow. And so probably about 5 years ago, I was working for an organization that had, we launched a franchise from scratch. And that really gave me such fulfillment in that whole entire process. So I love developing brands, and the chance to start something from scratch and then take it to market was really fulfilling. And I had a friend mention to me, she's like, you know, this, you could do this on your own. And I always said, no. First of all, who's going to hire me? You know, imposter syndrome just gets the best of everybody, right? So I thought, who's going to hire me? How would I even do this? And then if you fast forward to the end of 21, I was hired by Liberty Tax, which is a franchisor based out of Dallas, Texas, or Hearst, Texas, to be exact, has about 1,200 franchisees that do tax preparation. So they're a competitor to H&R Block or any of those that you're familiar with. And I moved my life down to Texas for this job and very quickly realized that it probably wasn't the best fit for me. And I started to panic a little bit and think, oh my gosh, I have made a mistake. What's everyone going to think? What's everyone back home going to say? She picked up and moved. And all of those things that we, you know, those stories that we tell ourselves really started to affect me. And I started to get physically ill and was so stressed out. And I decided, okay, this isn't good for me. I'm going to resign with no backup plan. And I told myself I was going to give myself about a month to figure things out. And the day that I resigned, the CEO said, is there anything I can do to keep you? And I said, no, I'm sorry. And he said, well, how about I continue to employ you, but as a contractor? He's like, I'd really like you to finish these projects. You're doing a great job. And it was just all of a sudden this light bulb went off for me. And I thought, I can do this on my own. Look, right now, somebody just hired you without even, you know, you haven't even given your business a name. And so that's kind of how, that's my origin story. And as I continued to tell people that I'm going out on my own, people called me. I had former clients from my ad agency days. I had ad agencies calling me. So it's been a really fun journey. And like I said, it just wasn't super premeditated, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, I love that journey.
Thank you.
You mentioned fractional CMO, and like one of the ways is that people contract you. In the B2B SaaS industry, I've been seeing a lot more that there are fractional CMOs, but a little bit different, where they are employed, but they have like that CEO title. And then they are actually like a fractional CMO too, because they're having to wear that marketing hat. Do you see that as another like commonality amongst startups that you work with?
Absolutely. So startups, we all know, have to be scrappy. You have to be scrappy with your resources and how you get stuff done, bootstrapping everything. And fractional executives is not just a fractional chief marketing officer. There can be, you know, fractional CEOs, COOs, even CFOs. That's kind of who paved the way for this fractional space. So I see a lot of fractional executives working with startups because it's affordable for the startup. You're getting, like I said, executive expertise that can help move that business forward. And many times you are wearing multiple hats. So I feel like I like to position myself as a leader with marketing expertise. So I'm going to come into your business and I can still look at your business from a holistic perspective and say, operationally, this is what we should do. And here's how it intersects with marketing. Or from a sales perspective, here's what we should do. Here's how it intersects with marketing. So I do see that overlap quite a bit, especially in the startup space.
So do you offer consulting as well as like actually doing the work for these startups, or is there a combination of the two?
Another great question that I get asked very often. So a lot of consultants will come in and provide the strategic overview, here's my opinion on how you should do some things, and then allow that team internally to execute. And honestly, that is what I prefer to do. But again, in a startup situation, they probably don't have the team members in place, to actually implement. So I do find myself doing some of the implementation as well. And I certainly can do it. I will admit it's not, one of my strengths, but because I have, 20 plus years of experience in the industry, I've kind of worn all of the hats in marketing, so I can do the execution. So it depends on what the client needs, or I am happy to identify somebody that can do their social for them or can run their paid campaigns. So that's also part of my services, identification of other partners and then management of those partners, if you want me to do that.
Okay. Well, I'm sure many of our listeners need your help. So
yes, thank you.
Okay. Well, Brooke actually reached out to me about coming on this podcast, and in her outreach, she had this hilarious marketing mess, and I'll have her share the story, but let's go ahead and dive into the marketing mess. And then from there, we can get more into our main topic of the day, which I'm excited about because I'm finding, even as a marketer myself, it's hard to decipher when you should stick to the basics and when you should try something new. And in the B2B SaaS industry, we're always wanting to try new things and get those early indicators in which certain projects are working and driving revenue. So we'll go into that topic right after we get into our marketing mess. So Brooke, take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. I love sharing this marketing mess. And I love that it's reframed as a mess and not a failure or a mistake, because I certainly learned from it, but it was quite the mess. So this was early on in my career. I was working at an ad agency, and we had a client that still is a financial institution, a very well-known, respected financial institution in the Midwest. And they had just recently entered into an agreement with the major university in town. So this is a major D1 school, huge fan base, and they were now the official financial sponsor of this university. That afforded them the opportunity to sponsor different events, to hand out giveaways, all of the stuff that goes along with sponsorships and the live reads at the game and things like that. So one of my tasks as the account manager for this account was to help them bring to life the sponsorship for a baseball weekend. And it just so happens that the weekend that the client picked, that the bank picked, was Mother's Day weekend. This was a huge weekend for we were playing Baylor University, so it was a big rivalry. Our baseball team was doing really, really well and probably going to make it to the College World Series. So if you're not familiar with that, that's like the pinnacle of college baseball. And so needless to say, big stage, and there was going to be a lot of people at this game. So we thought, okay, let's come up with some great ideas of giveaways that we could give the fans to put First National Bank in the forefront of their minds and to kind of remind them, you know, hey, we're the bank of Husker Nation. And so, by the way, I'm talking about the University of Nebraska, go Big Red. But so we brainstormed a bunch of ideas. And one of the things that I will just say as a tip is don't give away something just for the sake of like putting your logo on it. Give away something that's going to be meaningful and that your consumer is going to be able to use. So we took that mindset and said, okay, it's going to be a hot weekend and we know it's in May and there's going to be a lot of families there. Why don't we give away sunscreen? We thought that is a great thing to give away. It's useful. And we're going to, you know, position ourselves as, you know, providing something to the fans that they can use and kind of surprise and delight them. So we went back and forth at the client loved the idea, got that approved. Then we went back and forth as to what we were going to say on the actual packets of sunscreen. And as most people, if you've been in an ad agency before, can relate, the client gives you a lot of feedback and you go back and forth on the copy. And whatever we initially presented ended up getting some feedback and revised to the line that said, protect your skin like we protect your assets. Now, harmless, and it you know, nice play on words with the sunscreen, the sun protection, and the financial institution. So again, this seems very harmless, right? And so it's the week of the, so we order everything. It's the week of the big game. I think we ordered, it was either 5,000 or 7,500 packets of sunscreen. And I walk into my office and one morning and my desk is covered in condoms. And I just like, I look around and I was like, what is that? What? You know, and I'm kind of looking around and it's like, okay, who's the funny guy? And I'm looking at, and right away, like after it registered, okay, my desk is covered in condoms, I see the word protect. And I was like, oh, no, 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 no. And so I get real close and I pick one up and it says, protect your skin like we protect your assets. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are the sunscreen packets. So they're little square foil packets that had the word protect on them. So what else was I supposed to think? I mean, they looked exactly like a condom. So I called my boss in and I said, look what arrived today. And he goes, what is this? And I said, it's the sunscreen. He goes, it looks like a bunch of condoms to me. And I said, I know. And he goes, we can't hand these out. And I said, no, I know. And he goes, well, what happened here? And he goes, did you see a proof? And I said, of course I saw a proof. And he goes, did you get a sample before we ordered? And I said, no. And he goes, okay. So that was my big lesson. But the bigger lesson was then he said, well, we have to make this right. And I said, yeah, I know. And I said, so are we going to pay for it? And he goes, no, I mean, we're going to have to, when we call them, already have solutions to present to them. And that, I mean, this is a 20-year-old story. And that has stuck with me throughout my entire career is, yes, we messed up. And yes, we were going to call and own up to the mistake. But the best lesson and how and why it was so well received by the client is I not only did I say, Nancy, I have to tell you something, told her, but then I said, and here's what we're going to do to fix it. Mm-hmm. And we were out of time. I mean, there was no way that we were going to get something new in for the game. So what we decided to do was donate all of the sunscreen to local dermatology clinics. May happens to be National Skin Cancer Awareness Month. So it fit really well, got some good PR out of it for the bank, and we avoided a potential disaster. I mean, that's Mother's Day weekend. We couldn't hand these condoms, quote unquote, out at the game. But yeah, so yes, of course I need to get a proof, but also if you make a mistake like that and you're going to own up to it, make sure you have the solutions prepared ahead of time. Because mm-hmm. inevitably that's what the person's going to ask you is, okay, now tell me how you're going to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Well, one, that story is hilarious.
And I actually saved it because I knew that this was going to be like one of those things that I'll never forget in my career. And I, as we were talking in the green room, I am on this digital nomad journey. So everything is packed in a pod back in Texas, but it's, I have it. I still have that little sample because you can't not save something like that.
Oh yeah. That's like a defining moment in your career to learn from that.
Yes.
The second thing I really liked was your bigger takeaway, like coming ready with potential solutions to the problem. When I was starting out as a younger marketer, I never knew I could do those things. I just felt like I had to be like, oh my gosh, we have a problem. Like I need to like make my boss aware of it. And I had a similar experience where she's like, okay, but what are we going to do about it? And that's when I was like, I have nothing ready to show for it. And so luckily I had a great mentor at that time. And she's like, so in the future, this is what you should do. You should have these options laid out for me to choose from.
And you made a really good point. The options, we did present options to the client as well. They ultimately picked the donation to the dermatology clinics, but the options is also is a critical piece of that as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Okay. So I would love to go on to like our main topic, which we had discussed, like knowing when to try something new and when to stick to the basics. Will you share a little bit more about your methodology when it comes to deciphering those two?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a great question. And as I have evolved through my career, some of my opportunities presented to me and in my roles was coaching either other marketing managers within a network, maybe of franchisees or distributors, or doing public speaking for marketing groups. And so there's a couple things that I used to like to teach, and I still do use as practical applications to kind of decipher when you should stick to the basics and when you should try something new. So I'm going to give those to you, but then I'm going to also explain how it worked in a real scenario. So one thing I want to acknowledge is either in B2B or B2C marketing, first and foremost, and what getting down to the basics means to me is the relationship building. And if we're not thinking about the end user and how we are building trust and how we are building that relationship so that they will ultimately purchase from us, then we're doing something wrong as marketers. And so I feel like, you know, the relationship building and having really clear messaging are the basics, even though those can take time and somewhat seem complicated to someone that's outside of the marketing department. So I want to, you know, kind of say that. Then from a practical application, one thing too, when it comes to budgeting. So I used to take my budget and I would say 70% of my budget is going to go to tried and true tactics that I know have worked in the past for us. So quote, the basics. These are things that I can look at year over year and say those yielded results or those produced a return on investment that's worth investing in again. So 70% of my budget would be allocated towards that. Then 20% was allocated to things that I wanted to try. So again, the new things, like what was I going to try that maybe I hadn't done before, but maybe I had seen success from competitors. So I knew that there was a little bit some market, you know, pressure testing there. And then 10% was contingency. So I'll give an example. It's a couple years old, but when I came into a role where I started advising over 120 different independent contractors, Facebook was not yet the level it was now from an advertising perspective. So everyone was saying, oh, should we be on Facebook? Should we be advertising on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, okay, well, if nobody's done it yet in our, like in our, within our four walls, this is going to be a little bit risky and it's going to take us convincing leadership that we're going to invest in this tactic. But here is what we're seeing others in the market do. So we know that there's some potential, like people are doing it for a reason. So that, like in that scenario, Facebook would have been in my 20% budget allocation of something I was going to quote, try, because we hadn't done it before, but yet I'd seen others do it before. So that is like a real granular example. The other thing I like to do is I like to draw a grid on a piece of paper. And what I like to do is look at our cost per acquisition. So regardless if you're in B2B or B2C, you probably have a target cost that you're going for when you want to acquire a new customer. And then you're probably looking at conversion rates. So I will take this four, you know, I'll draw four quadrants on a piece of paper, and I'll write a high cost per acquisition, high conversion rate. Then I'll write high cost per acquisition, low conversion rate, low cost per acquisition, high conversion rate, and then low, low. And I would look at all of my tactics and I would start to plot them on the graph. And that's also really revealing to see, okay, I want a low cost per acquisition and I want a high conversion rate. That's going to be the best lead for me because I'm getting a quality lead and it's converting at a high rate to a sale. I want to keep doing that. To me, that's the basics. Mm-hmm. And that is basics for me and for my organization. But this system or this, I don't know what you call it. Yeah, my formula can be applied to any business, but your basics might be different than mine. A SaaS company's basics might be different than a home services basics, but it's what works for your company that I think is important. But if you have some sort of formula you can apply, I think that does get you pretty far down the path and allows you to justify to leadership why you're spending in certain areas versus others.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If they don't know their numbers, what are some other ways that they can figure out if something is working?
Mm-hmm. So that is a great question. So first and foremost, to me, the basics in that situation are consistency. So being consistent with our message and being consistent with where we're putting our message out, but then relying on, you're going to have to rely at this point, if you don't have the numbers, on some of the anecdotal feedback. So what are we, you know, are we not getting responses to our ads? Are we not getting inbound leads? What are people, if we're outbound calling, what are they saying? What are their objections? And start to see, because that will tell you a story as well. So if you're getting certain, the same objection over and over, to me, that's an indication that maybe my message isn't clear. My value proposition isn't clear. And so getting that down first and foremost is so critically important, especially for a startup. Get your brand down, know what your message is, and then be consistent with it. You're mm-hmm. going to keep saying it over and over again, because that does take time, but your sales are going to be a lagging indicator of what you've put out in the market. So you're going to have to kind of try a few things to see, okay, that worked, but the message didn't resonate. And there are certain things that you can look at too, even mm-hmm. from a paid media perspective, you're going to have to put a little money in the market. You can optimize pretty quickly and see that didn't resonate, that didn't land. Do a lot of A/B testing, would to me is a basic tactic as well. So you can A/B test landing pages or the message that you put out to drive to the landing page, A/B test subject lines and email. But basics to me is getting your message nailed pretty early on.
Yeah, I would even add to that, that you can be consistent on one channel. I think that sometimes at early stage startups, we want to like try all the different channels, which is totally fine to start there. But if a channel isn't working, there's no sense in trying to make it work. Like say, for example, with B2B SaaS, I'm not seeing TikTok perform that well. So maybe it's like you don't spend as much time there, or maybe you don't spend any efforts at all there. And I just think that that's an important reminder that you don't have to be everywhere at once.
Exactly. And that goes back to the relationship building and understanding your customer and where they are. And I would agree with you. I don't think that that would be my first recommendation for B2B SaaS is to be on TikTok. It would probably be on LinkedIn from a social perspective, but what thought leadership are we putting out in the marketplace that positions us in a way that people are interested in what we're offering? And then, you know, outbound tactics would be useful as well. But yeah, you really need to pay attention to where your customers are and where the engagement rates are. And if you continue to get low engagement rate, let's just, you know, pivot and go to where we are getting the higher engagement.
Sure. We talked about the basics. So maybe we can talk about like when someone should experiment with their budget, even if, again, they're at an early stage startup and they want to try something that sounds outlandish. How would you decide for them to like keep a strategic mindset behind it, but also go test it out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it goes back to your business plan and your business objectives. So what are we doing? Are we, you know, if we had a certain revenue goal that we had to hit this year or a certain number of new clients that we had to bring in to hit that revenue goal, what makes the most sense to get there? And, you know, you kind of back up from there. So then what's our marketing goal? And then what's our marketing strategy? And then if you look at your budget and say, okay, we've got 20% allocated to quote, try something new. Okay, we've never done a trade show before. And we've never tried, to go back to your example, TikTok before. So now we've got two options to weigh. You know, we have 20% of our budget allocated for this. Which one are we going to do? And then you really need to start analyzing, okay, you know, what is the long play here? So if we create content for TikTok, we can repurpose it in other, on other channels. Okay, so that's one pro in that column. And then from a, you know, a trade show perspective, we get in front of people and we can control our message better and we can answer questions and we get real feedback. That might be more valuable to us because we can actually start to interact with potential customers. And so I think you have to start weighing the pros and cons and kind of play the scenario out in a meeting or two to say, okay, these are all of the long-term benefits that we could get from doing X versus Y, and then make the decision on what's going to move the business forward.
Yep.
And you may not know, I mean, that's what testing is about. I mean, that famous marketing quote, you know, is if half of that money I spend on advertising is wasted, the trouble is I don't know which half. So you know, you have to be willing to try, and entrepreneurs and startups, there has to be some risk, that you can't be risk averse because you're never going to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, let's transition to our last segment, which is your favorite tool that you couldn't live without. I'm going to have you describe it to me, and then I'm going to try to guess it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm trying to think of what I'm using right now that is my favorite, because I've got a couple. But okay, so this one I use on a daily basis, and I'm allowed to have a couple other team members collaborate with me. I can share what I've created back and forth. I don't have to have a degree in this particular space to create things. I can create presentations. I can create stuff for social. I can create emails. It is super user-friendly. Like I said, I didn't go to school for this piece, and applaud anybody with the skills to do this in the real world. But it's been such a, as an entrepreneur, it's an affordable option to create materials, either digitally or for print.
Is it Canva?
It is Canva.
Yes. Okay. So I had another guest. It was the same thing, the same tool. And she told me that you can print stuff from it. And I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Canva awesome. Has been a game changer. And to be honest, I'm working with three startups right now, and all of us are using Canva. Like, they all created their own teams, and that's what we create stuff in. It's just so easy, mm-hmm. and it's affordable. It's like $15 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love Canva. I use it too for like social templates. Yes. Honestly, like, we've moved our gated pieces of content in there because mm-hmm. of like the template format. But yeah, that's a great tool.
Yes. I was trying to be like, I don't know what's the, I was trying to be a little vague to make it seem mm-hmm. harder. Good job.
No, that's good. All right. Well, we are coming up on time. Brooke, thanks so much for being here. Can you tell everyone how they can find you?
Absolutely. So thank you for having me. And I'm very active on LinkedIn. So you can find me by searching my name, Brooke Janicek, on LinkedIn. I have a little emoji next to my name that looks like a little leaf or a little sprout. That is a nod to my brand of my business, The Grow CMO. And that website is thegrowcmo.co.
Thanks for joining us today, Two Pizza Marketers. If you liked the episode, it would mean a lot to us if you take the time to leave a review. And if you have any questions or topics to suggest, we're always happy to hear from you. So send us an email at pizzamarketers@gmail.com. And until next time, keep having fun and try to stay sane in the marvelous mess that is Two Pizza Marketing.